Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Molly and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Let's see if Bodie can keep the team alive. Here's the pitch on the way. A swing and a miss, strike three, and this ball game is over. Hader strikes out Bodie. Cubs score twice, leave one, but the final, Milwaukee 6, Cubs 3.
I think these guys do have a plan to start off, but they're still, whether it's the timing or, what they need to get going. I don't think that's quite, obviously that's not there yet in their mind. And sometimes it can just be, a ball fisted to the shortstop for a base hit like Wilson got to debt tonight, or it can be a home run to get guys going. But if we knew exactly what we could do to get them going, we would be figuring out. These guys are working on a lot of stuff in the cage and continue to press forward.
Shake it up. Shake it up.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score.
Oh, I love
it's
that.
It's for Dustin. Yeah.
Well
big
done,
Cars Ray. Fan that he is. That was a fun exercise. You know, I think the problem that I was having is that it's a collective of players not playing well. When you just go down the list of batting averages, it's pretty appalling. Now, I know, that's not the number that you're judging a guy by. I understand that there are different metrics involved, but I can tell when someone's not doing a good enough job. A lot of my lineup was just punitive. My lineup was a shake it up for one day kind of lineup, just to try to force people into kind of facing the reality of where they're at and where they belong. I think your lineup was more of a potential lineup to run out there for a series or so, or even, maybe you stick with a lineup like that. I'm just trying to
make a point.
I'm benching Jason Hayward to try to, wake the hell up.
You're making a point. You're tipping over the clubhouse table with food on it. You are walking in there, manager Mully, and saying, you know what? You don't like what's going on here. Change it yourselves. And if you don't like it, you're going to be batting eighth. I'm looking at it not necessarily to make a point. It's trying to win a game. I'm trying to get on base.
Yeah.
I'm trying to start the engine with Nico Hoerner at the top and saying, okay, kid, here you go. We were wrong in demoting you. We realized that mistake. We need you on base so we can move you over and hit you in. And so I don't know. I don't know that you can move around. Here's the crux of it is that, as David Ross alluded to, now Chris Bryant hit a home run last night. He's off to a decent start. But you still would like to see the players you've come to trust reward that trust finally by being the players you know they can be. And they're not.
No, they're not. Bryant has done okay for himself. And he's the closest thing to being the player that you were kind of hoping for. These numbers are just atrocious up and down the line. It is really rough to find anybody that you feel is going to change things. So you're moving them around to try to get them to put them in a different spot and see if you can get anything out of them there. And again, for me, especially when I'm getting toward the bottom of the lineup, I think that, if I'm moving Ian Happ down, he's not going to be happy. And then I'm bringing up Nico Horner. He's going to supply something. So I like that 1-2 punch. Then I'm getting rid of the pitcher with the out there. And here you go, Jock Peterson. You're batting ninth. I'll start you against lefties and righties, but you're at the bottom of the order until you prove to me that you can start knocking some home runs out.
Punitive. You're just punitive.
It's punitive, but it you know who's more punitive is Hayward, who I left out. I don't want to see you strike out again, sir.
Okay. You know what, though?
You're making too much money.
Going back to our phone call from our buddy Kevin, he makes a really good point about not only what's going on this week, but what you're looking at in the division. And so you lose to the Brewers last night, and you think, okay, did we just miss on our best chance to win a game in this series? Because today, here comes Brandon Woodruff. And, oh, by the way, the last time you saw him, one hit in 7 innings. And then tomorrow, okay, there's Corbin Burnes. You know what he is? He's the first pitcher in baseball history, according to the stats and the service, that to go 6-plus innings without a walk and give up one hit. Woodruff and Burnes the next two nights for a Cubs team that is anemic offensively and in going through a stretch of futility that they never have since they've been keeping records in 1901, 49 hits through 10 games. That is the worst production.
Okay.
Yikes.
Get to four runs wins, right? That's it. You got to score four and you'll win.
Okay.
That's what we've seen thus far in this season. So you got to get four any way you can. And you got to do it. You got to scrap. You got to fight. You got to lean into one. You got to do whatever it takes to keep the line moving, to get guys. What you can't do is just swing for the – that's why I have Javi where I have him, because he's just swinging for the fences. They want him to be greedy. And guess what? That's fine. He struck out 17 times. Other than that, his numbers are surprisingly decent when you break them down. Other than all the strikeouts, the play was magnificent.
17 strikeouts,
but
Mully.
That's a lot of strikeouts.
He's
I'm not saying it isn't.
He's swinging from his back foot. And
I understand. I've watched him, but he's connected. He's got 3 home runs, which is sharing the team. Well, no, I guess Rizzo has 4, right? No, that's hits. What am I doing?
As a friend
he's got 3
of mine.
Home runs. He and Javi have 3 homers, and that's
texted me last
good.
Night. Been around the team for a long time. Says this looks like Javi 2014 version. This looks like the guy that has not yet learned how to show that discipline to play. And I know it's a conundrum. It really is, because came into the season and Rossi talked about telling the guys, well, they need to be more selfish. We need to change our approach. Ron Coomer has reinforced this idea. A guy that knows a lot more about hitting than we do, and he said, you know what? They're caught in between because of their approach and what used to work doesn't work anymore, and they're kind of caught in between. And Javi just looks kind of lost. I mean, he has more talent than he's showing.
He's hitting his 243, 282, 514. The only guy that has a higher slugging percentage is Chris Bryant. I get it. I understand that he's not doing well, and that he's striking out too much, and that he's swinging for the fences. But guess what?
What?
They're getting nothing from some of these guys. They're getting absolutely nothing. Anthony Rizzo is 118, 225, 235. I mean, come on, man. That's Anthony Rizzo. Jock Peterson, 129, 222, 226. Ian Happ, 143, 314, 250. This is a train wreck.
I'm not willing, though, to say that. I mean, Javi, okay, the numbers compared to those guys on a team that has been historically bad, his numbers don't seem quite as egregious. But they still, when you watch him, like yesterday, or I guess it was 2 days ago now, first and third, you know, less than 2 outs, and you can't make contact. It's so okay. Frustrating. I think his at-bats are more frustrating.
I agree with you, but he has 17 strikeouts. Contreras has 12. So does Jock Peterson. 11 for Chris Bryant, and 10 for Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward's line, 152, 200, 273. Come on, man. That's a lot of money being just kind of flushed. give me a break.
Yeah. So
he's not
the
problem, Javi. He's not the solution.
But he's not doing what he needs to do either. He's not. No. Nobody's really having a good start. Javi's just having maybe a less bad start than some of those other guys. But
it looks worse because of all the strikeouts.
I think so. Yeah, I think, and when he strikes out, he strikes out magnificently. You know, he's like, you know, this is not just like, oh, he doesn't get cheated, and he takes those swings that make you think that his approach is back to what it used to be before he was a more polished, refined hitter. But if that's what they're looking for, and they're playing that game, and they need them to go back to being those kind of guys, all right. So it's frustrating all the way around.
And you know, I think that the problem is that we are, you know, they're 4-6 with the arrow pointed down. Like, we do feel like they're running into some good pitching, and it could be that they're heading to, you know, a bottoming out, pretty bad type of thing happening for them. I don't know how else to feel about it. You know, the White Sox, conversely, they're not setting the world afire either. They're not, you know, going crazy and having this unbelievable year or anything, but they are 5-5, and that's a half game out of the division lead.
Yeah, and they're getting some big hits for some guys who you might not have anticipated carrying this team offensively. Maybe that's overstating it, but Adam Eaton the last two games has been really clutch, and with the home run, with the long ball, and you, before that it was Yermin Mercedes. So these are some maybe unlikely guys who have emerged as far as offensive threats that have been better than expected. The bullpen last night delivered on its promise. Molly, I do wonder this, while we're nitpicking lineups on both sides of town, do you think Tony La Russa has a reservations about Andrew Vaughn that he hasn't quite acknowledged publicly? Do you think that that's more there? Because I wonder every time I see Nick Williams in the lineup, why not Andrew Vaughn?
Well, I think that
matchup.
I think that it's real simple. I think that Andrew Vaughn is a DH. He's a DH and a backup first baseman, and they haven't needed him in either of those roles, quite frankly. I don't think he is a left fielder. I think Nick Williams is a left fielder. I don't know that he's a great player or he's much above replacement, but I think he's a left fielder, and you don't have to worry about him in the outfield, and he can, you know, do maybe just enough to justify being in the lineup. But I think that because Yermin Mercedes is the DH right now and has deserved that role, I don't think that Andrew Vaughn is needed right now as their DH. And as a result, I think that, you know, this idea that he's a left fielder is a place to get his bat in the lineup. But if you don't actually need his bat in the lineup, then why would you put him out there? And why would you deal with that?
Because that is the best you're going to be able to do this year until you get healthy. And hey, Tony La Russa told Bruce and I on Saturday that he didn't feel at all concerned about Andrew Vaughn's ability to protect a lead in a one-run game, and he felt like he had made some strides defensively. But what he has said and what he has done have been two different things, and maybe it's just I need to get past this, but every time I see Nick Williams in there, and yesterday he batted seventh playing left field, I'm like, it triggers me a little bit. I'm like, if you really do believe in your rookie, now you're going to sit him another day. I just don't know how you're not there to develop players, well, but I
exactly.
do wonder.
You're there to win, and if you feel that you have like no a defensive liability or no, you know, a defensive uncertainty. I that's a better way of putting it, because I don't know that Nick Williams isn't a liability, but I think he is a certainty. I think you know exactly how he's going to play the position. So that takes one element of it out, and then maybe he can do something at the plate. And the thing is, they're winning. So, I mean, they're not winning every game, and they should have won, obviously, the second game against Kansas City that they lost on Sunday. That was terrible. But I don't think it's the fielding and the outfield that's hurting them. I also wonder, like, when is Adam Engel coming back, right? If Tim Anderson's coming back Thursday, shouldn't Engel be getting ready to come back fairly soon, given
after
the timetable he was on?
Tim Anderson starting Thursday, and they
yes.
said it would be a little bit later
right.
for Adam Engel. So I wonder how far away we are from that, where some of these conversations will be moot. But I just look, maybe I'll feel different when Nick Williams actually gets a hit. But I just don't know why
he's
you would have.
He's
Nick
had,
Williams?
Nick Williams had a hit. It's not like he hasn't
I
had
think
a
he's
hit.
Been on base, but I don't think he's
really he hasn't had a hit yet, because he has been on base.
0-6, I believe.
Is that right? Okay. Well, I mean, listen, I'm not like leading the Nick Williams fan club. I'm just saying that I think that you could do okay if you don't. I mean, I guess I'm not leading the Andrew Vaughn and left field band club. That's
yeah. You never liked that idea. Yeah.
I never liked that idea. So
yeah,
that's probably why I'm not the guy to talk about. And it doesn't trigger me because I never liked that idea. I just thought it was something they started way too late to actually be effective. And, you know, it's not like he's hitting the hell out of the ball, David, and demanding that he be in the lineup. So I'm happy right now to have Yermin. He's taking pitches. He's hitting the ball. He's doing some good things. And, you know, it's been really good to have him come up. And Danny Mendick has done a really admirable job. A couple more walks added to his total. You know, he's doing fine. So I think that they've gotten contributions and they're you know, taking days off the calendar until everyone comes back.
Yermin Mercedes, first guy out of the dugout to congratulate Nick Madrigal after Madrigal scored the game-winning
yeah.
run. Positive highlight with Nick Madrigal on the base paths. You will take that as a Sox fan, so that's a good sign.
All right, we're going to bring in Casey Johnson. We're going to find out what has gone wrong with the Bulls, and Casey will join us on Twitch. If you're not watching us on Twitch, you're missing out, because there's so many kind of crazy things that happen. David with his man in the box. I mean, there's just a lot that goes on during our little
box.
Twitch session. Don't you do the man in the wind, caught in the wind? It's yes, Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Stop it! They not do him like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 to The Score. Always a delight to talk to KC Johnson. He's brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. KC, good morning. How are you?
Morning, KC.
What's going on, guys? Happy to see you on Twitch. Happy to be with you on the radio, man.
Yeah, you look like a million as always. And KC, I think maybe it's the schedule, maybe it's the road, maybe, who knows. But the Bulls, I was expecting more. I was just expecting more. And the last few nights have been really deflating, because the playoff bandwagon is kind of, has a broken wheel or something. We got to fix the bandwagon.
Yeah, it's certainly a difficult stretch right now. That, as you mentioned before you brought me in, Mully, the 3-7 since making the big news on trade deadline day. And, you know, I think it really is a combination of things. It's guys in different roles. It's guys learning how to play differently stylistically. It's a tough schedule stretch, as you mentioned, 9-10 on the road. Good opponents, little practice time. Some guys are banged up. Guys are in different roles, as I mentioned, like Lauri Markkanen is looking lost out there right now, coming off the bench. But, you know, you still shouldn't lose to the Timberwolves, or I should say you still shouldn't give up 120 points to the Timberwolves. So that's the alarming stuff, is the bad losses that are sprinkled throughout this stretch. They do have an opportunity now with some home games, with some, you know, winnable games on paper against some less quality opponents. So it's on them to put this together and play more consistently at both ends.
Yeah, KC, they have a game and a half lead over the Raptors in 11th place, and I guess that's what the Bulls need to cling to, is that hope of squeaking in and getting in a play-in opportunity. Here's a question, though. I mean, obviously last night it was more about shooting, or as much about shooting as it was about the lack of defense. But when Billy Donovan comes close but stops just short of naming names defensively, I wonder who he's implicating most, and I wonder who's not, you know, being more of a having more of a presence defensively in the paint. And with Vucevic, is he somebody that defensively are you're going to just deal with some of those limitations because of all that he is as an offensive threat, or what is Billy Donovan basically saying when he's not being specific defensively?
Yeah, I mean, I will say when Billy does cite the defense, he more often than not focuses on the point of attack and the ball containment. Look, you don't really even need to hear his words. You just watch the games. I mean, Troy Brown Jr. is closing games now. But let me say that again. Troy Brown Jr. is closing games now. That's a scenario I did not envision. This is not a knock on Troy Brown Jr. I think he's got a lot of upside. He's very athletic. But with Garrett Temple out, who's probably one of your better perimeter wing defenders, with Patrick Williams looking a little bit overwhelmed right now for the first time all season, with Lowry, as I mentioned before, looking kind of lost, Troy Brown Jr. is closing games for the Bulls. I mean, that tells you all you need to know. And, you know, last night he's matched against Ja Morant most of the time. Now, to your point, David, that with Vucevic, I mean, you knew what you were getting when you traded for him, and you knew exactly what you were giving up. And you knew, his – I wouldn't even call them defensive limitations because he's not a bad team defender. He's obviously a good defensive rebounder. He does go vertical more often than not, but he is not a great rim protector, and he's not a great one-on-one defender. So those are issues too. And, yes, he does typically cite Tice and Young when he talks about big man defense. I mean, Young obviously is adept at taking charges. Tice is the most physical – and mobile of the big defenders. So there are a lot of issues defensively. And, you know, as I mentioned before, when you're giving up 120 points to the Timberwolves, there's a lot that needs to be fixed. And the difficult part is that there's such little practice time in this crazy schedule to try to fix things.
Yeah. I think that we knew that was going to be a problem. And, you know, I hate to say this, but boy, you know, had they been able to make that deal marking in for Lonzo Ball, that would have been a real home run, because this team still needs a point guard, Casey. It still needs a guy that can be a two-way player and run an offense. And you know, you saw a bad turnover again at the end of the game yesterday. You're just short a player, as great as it is to have two all-stars.
Yeah, and you know, I'm specifically speaking about Lonzo, Mully, as I try to struggle to talk here on 6 hours sleep, you know, he's also a very good defender. But you know, that ship has sailed. That ship has sailed. You gotta finish strong when he's 19 with what you got. But yes, I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about their need for a point guard. And you know, Sato is another guy who's kind of disappeared of late here. I mean, he had some very strong games leading up to this kind of dip. And those happen over the course of a season. You know, guys go up and down and have moments of inconsistency and things like that. But, you know, Billy's more focused just on the team play. And that's the big thing, is when you adjust your style offensively as much as the Bulls have, and then, you know, try to incorporate guys defensively who are picking up new terminology with little practice time. It's a lot. And that's not to make excuses. That's just calling it like it is. And it was a difficult schedule stretch. So this is where you've got to rectify things. Is this opportunity here at home coming up with more games at home than not, and against teams with opportunities for wins.
Casey, we haven't talked to you since last Friday night when Zach LaVine dropped 50. And I just wondered, as long as you have covered the Bulls, that first half where he scored 39, including 25 straight points, how does that rank in the best things you have seen all time in terms of individual performances from the Bulls? And then, I guess, companion to that, did the Bulls get caught watching Zach try to do what he does, and did that contribute at all to the loss?
You know, as far as the first point, the mitigating factor, David, and you guys know this, is you're not in the arena. So that negates it a little bit. But I will say, no, it was still pretty special and pretty palpable. I mean, when you're sitting there you know, covering these games like we are, you know, road games we're watching on TV just like everybody else, and then jumping on Zoom afterward. It was coming through the screen, and you recognize it was something special, and then it starts catching fire, obviously, on social media throughout the league. Other players are noticing. I mean, that was electric. But, you know, it's muted a little bit just by not being there in person. But, look, when you score 25 straight points, that's pretty ridiculous. You know, I saw some of the talk about, you know, maybe some of the loss being on Zach and him trying to play hero ball or, you know, I don't see it, man. I mean, to me, it was team-wide defensive issues. They had trouble containing. You know, Zach is one of the guards that was having trouble containing a lot of the guards. I mean, that was a three-guard attack that broke them down in D'Angelo Russell, Ricky Rubio, and Anthony Edwards. So he is one of those guys that, you know, has some blame defensively, but I saw a lot of team-wide defensive breakdowns. And, you know, Zach was scoring so efficiently that first half that, you know, the second half his percentage went down, obviously, but it was still a pretty special night. So I kind of separated the two personally. I mean, when you score 50 points, you know, you're obviously having a pretty special night, and the loss is just a bad loss.
That might have been as bad a loss as I've seen them have this year, because they were up like five with 7 minutes left, and then it was like they just stopped playing. It was like the weirdest thing. I couldn't believe possession after possession where they're getting nothing and giving up easy buckets, and you're just like – and they lost that game handle. I mean, it wasn't – like at the end, it was like a 10-point win or something, and you just sit there after watching that turn at that point. It was hard to celebrate anything.
Yeah, no, and Zach felt it. I mean, yeah. Zach takes losing as deeply as anybody, and just, you know, obviously we tried to coax, you know, what scoring 50 meant to him out of him, but you know, for the most part, he was pretty despondent over the loss. I mean, I did finally get one sound bite by pressing him, just saying, you know, separate the individual from the personal. But for the most part, he was focused on the loss, as he should have been. I mean, that was a bad loss, and for a team. You know, the larger theme here, guys, and we kind of touched on it with that first question and answer, but, you know, when that trade was made, it was not to keep floating in the 10 seed. It was to rise and you know, even get out of the play-in situation and get to that 6 seed. They're 5.5 clear of the 6 seed now. They're obviously closer to the 11 seed in Toronto, although I don't see any way in which Toronto rights that ship. Just looks pretty bad there. So I think 10th is safe, but that trade was not made for 10th. And it wasn't just made for this season. It was made for the future. I understand that. But that's why you've got to figure things out over these final 19 games and try to move up those standings a little bit.
Interesting podcast, Bulls Talk podcast with Jason Goff, KC. You guys talked to Thaddeus Young, who revealed that he had contemplated retiring after last season. It was that bad. How surprising was that? And when you do look ahead at the future, what's his part in this Bulls future? Because he does have a partial guarantee next year.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that he'll be back with the Bulls if he wants to be. We did ask him how much longer he plans to play. You know, it's odd to promote my podcast on your guys' radio program, but I will promote our podcast on your radio program. Because I will say, like, that is, as you guys know, I mean, just watching from far, man, like, he's as candid and as comfortable as a veteran as you can get. And when you just hit on the right mood and have a conversation like Jason and I were privileged enough to have with him, it was pretty fun stuff, man. And he talks about, you know, how his family will impact, how much longer he plans to play. I personally see the Bulls bringing him back, but that's a guesstimate. That's not reporting. Just the level he's playing at, obviously. And then as far as the seriousness of how much last season bothered him, that's as deep as he's gone. I mean, we all reported and knew how early in the season he was unhappy with his role and his usage. But that's as deep as he's gone. And, you know, he credits his wife for kind of talking him off the ledge. And Bulls fans should be happy that she did that, because he's having such a great year. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, he was also very candid about, you know, everything he was telling us. He had talked to the coaching staff about it. I mean, this is not a surprise to anybody involved in the coaching staff. Thad is not an underhanded guy. He's a straight up shooter. So it's a fun listen. So when you're done listening to Score all day today, you know, tune in tonight. It'll be there on your podcast wherever you get them.
Thanks, KC. When a guy contemplates retirement, you sometimes think then he's mentally gone. But I think he's played this year like a guy that rediscovered something, that had something taken away from him and given back to him. And I think he's been brilliant this year. Great player.
Yeah, that's well said, Melian. That's what I asked him. Is like, I mean, we're asking, like, are you going to come back for your 15th year? He could sign another contract the level he's playing. He's only 32 years old. So that's why I asked him, like, how much longer do you want to play? So check it out, you know, midnight tonight. Sorry, Grobber. Is he still on at midnight?
Yeah, he is. Thanks, KC.
KC, God bless. See you, buddy. That is KC Johnson, and that's fun stuff. We're going to bring Lamont Pope from the Tribune in next, and we'll talk about what's going on with the Chicago White Sox. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Tony, all your years managing, have you ever seen a game end like that?
Well, I heard, did it carry him off the helmet? It's about time we call one of those breaks. But I mean, there was, both teams put an awful lot into that game. So, outstanding win for us. A lot of, on the pitching staff, especially the defense, we really showed up big. Had to win, only way you could win that game.
Oh, it was a magnificent win. Mully and Haw on the Score. We're delighted. It was very unusual. We're delighted to welcome in Lamont Pope, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Lamont, how are you?
Morning, Lamont.
I'm doing great. Good morning, guys. How are you?
You know, love that comment from Tony La Russa, because he has seen it all, and that's baseball, right? You know, a guy's going to throw one off somebody's helmet, and, hey, you'll take it, and you walk off like a thief in the night. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I think they practice that play during spring training, right? The old ground ball to first, off the runner, and then the runner scores. Very, very unusual ending, and, you know, to really in a situation where, you know, the Sox have had some bounces go the other way, and so for them to get one, you know, they'll definitely take it.
So, Lamont, how did it come to pass then that we obviously, Rodon had the stomach ailment, and then Keiko leapfrogs Giolito in the rotation, goes from, it's expected to pitch tomorrow, I suppose it was, to yesterday. How did that all come about and was explained?
Yeah, Dallas said that he found out about a couple hours before the game that he was going to be the starter. You know, obviously, you take a look at the night before with Michael Kopech going a couple innings, Garrett Crochet going in relief as well in the extra innings there. And so those are two guys that they've been using in those sort of long relief type of roles. So with those two guys unavailable, Dallas kind of became that guy that had to step on up. And, you know, he said that he did throw a bullpen the day before, but he went on through his routine, and he was able and willing to go, and he was able to give him five-plus innings of good baseball. And then they were able to get into the bullpen, which, you know, obviously the bullpen has been, had some ups, had some downs. But Evan Marshall came on in and getting a big strikeout against Jose Ramirez, and then obviously Cody Hoyer coming in and being able to give them some length there out of the pen as well. And so everything worked on out, you know, probably well beyond what they were expecting, given that sort of scenario with Rodon being sick.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I thought that, you know, you saw them lose a game where Bummer followed by Hendricks and then Crochet, each of them gave up a run. And this is the greatest bullpen ever assembled, so I didn't know that could happen. It was a joy to see Cody Hoyer come in and dominate in the way that he did. You know, it just was an important thing to remind you that, okay, it's going to be okay, and you got Kopech ready to go, and, you know, this will eventually work out, and I don't need tarot cards or any sage sprayed to know that.
Yeah, no, it's one of those situations where, you know, the bullpen, obviously, there have been situations, you know, like I said, an opening night, you know, the ball bounces off a Bummer's glove, Nick Madrigal throws one away, and so there was some bad breaks there in the eighth inning on the opening night. You know, a couple nights later, Evan Marshall's on the mound, and, you know, he throws a good pitch, Justin Upton puts a better swing on it and hits the home run. And so, you know, there have been, and then obviously the blow up there in the last game in the Seattle series where Matt Foster gave a bunch of runs where Tony took the blame afterwards by keeping on in a little longer than he probably should have. So the bullpen has had some shaky moments, but then there have been some pluses. I mean, Kopech making that transition from being a starter, temporary transition anyway, from being a starter into the bullpen, he's been lights out. and Hoyer yesterday. I mean, just showing his full array of pitches and being able to get him in big situations. Obviously, not being phased in that ninth inning after the phantom strikeout that was a strikeout that wasn't called a strikeout, and he was able to make a couple more pitches and get the strikeout to end the inning there. The fact that the bullpen has all the talent in the world, I do believe that they're still going to be one of the better bullpens in all the American League, and you're able to finally see that come to fruition a little bit last night.
So, Lamon, Liam Hendricks has given up two home runs, I think, in three outings, hasn't he? Or he's given up so far. It has not started well. And while yesterday was entertaining to hear him talk about the tarot card reader and spraying sage, and we all got a good laugh out of that because he is a colorful personality and we enjoy that. Did he say anything tangibly or of substance that would explain why he's off to the slow start? Is this something that has happened at other points in his career? Did he offer any solutions or anything other than the stuff that we have focused on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also a scenario where here's someone who, during his introductory press conference, talked about wanting to get the ball 81 times in a season, right? And he just really hasn't received a ton of work, so far this season to kind of get into that rhythm, get into that, establishment of the daily routine that he's on the mound, making, even if it's getting a couple on outs there. And so I think once he kind of gets into that little bit more of a rhythm where he's in the in-game, he's only had the one save situation. And then, obviously the game out in Anaheim, he came on in the eighth inning, got the big out there, and then the lead kind of got away. And so he was just making pitches, and Ohtani hits the home run there. And obviously, last night, or a couple nights ago with the save situation where he blew that one. First time, I think, in 15 save opportunities that they blew it. So I think it's a little bit more of just kind of getting to the rhythm, getting the opportunity to get on the mound a little bit more and make all those pitches happen.
A big game tonight, obviously, Lucas Giolito on the bump, and they're going to counter with Shane, don't call me Justin Bieber. Hope it's not too late to say sorry. let that guy – I mean, he's a good pitcher. I'm not bad-mouthing him, but I don't know many people that like guys named Shane. That was actually just a shot of the guy who works here. Shane Beard. But that's a very good pitching matchup. Any idea how – Lucas is feeling, where he's at, and what do you expect tonight?
Yeah, I mean, those two matched on up a couple times last year, and there were some and they're really, really great games. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how that plays on out. Lucas has looked pretty good so far. It's one of those situations again. They want to kind of get some length out of their starters, and that's been one of the problems. Other than Lance Lynn's outing, the complete game shutout, they just really haven't had the ability to have that length out of their starters. And so, the longer that Lucas can go, it can save those guys in the bullpen and have that opportunity where you're not going to be kind of relied upon a situation where you might have to go on, well, can Kopech go today, after going 3 days or three innings the other day? What's Crochet's status? What's Hoyer's status? And, I'm guessing Hoyer's probably not going to be available after throwing so much last night. And so, the more that they can get, the more length that they can get out of Lucas tonight will be crucial for the team for tonight's game.
So any idea about what's going to happen with the lineup? Because you've got maybe, everybody's been waiting for the Shane Bieber, Yermín Mercedes matchup since all winter long. Is he going to be definitely the DH against the right-hander? Do you think Zach Collins sits? Obviously, you would expect Grandal to be behind the plate, I would hope, with Giolito. So what, any surprises in the lineup in store? I know we'll probably see Nick Williams because he's got to be in there.
I mean, it's been some unique lineup construction so far, for sure. Yeah, obviously, you want to see, fans want to see a little more of Andrew Vaughn, and it's a situation where, you remember a couple years ago with Eloy, obviously he kind of struggled out of the gate. He was getting a bunch of sliders and a bunch of sliders, and he made that adjustment, and he was able to, become a player that's been able to hit pole to pole. Obviously last year with Luis Robert, he got off to such a sizzling start, but then when things kind of took a tumble there in September, he was still in the lineup day in and day out and learning. And the thing with Andrew, you kind of might want to see him kind of. Yeah, I know he's struggling a little bit at the plate, but you might want to kind of see him get a few more at bats or just kind of see, get a taste of what life is like here in the big leagues. As far as, but you mentioned Mercedes. I mean, that's part of the problem as well, or, well, good problem, I guess, for the Sox, that he's been so hot that, you know, it's been tough to get him out of the lineup. You know, here's someone that you, you know, never really would have expected, eight hits and eight at-bats, just, you know, and never, not really letting the moment get too big for him. I thought one of his big moments for me was, you know, he was named the Player of the Week a week ago Monday, and then he met with us, and then he, and instead of just sort of like letting that, you know, all that moment and all that pressure kind of get to him, he goes on out that night and gets three more hits. And so he's just been hitting left and right, and, you know, two strikes, you know, any sort of scenario, you know, last night in the ninth inning, beats out an infield hit, kind of extend that inning along. And so, yeah, I guess that's a good problem for the Sox to have from that standpoint. But, you know, again, you kind of want to get Andrew Vaughn in a little bit more and kind of get him, get his feel and get him sort of adjusted to big league pitching.
Lamont, thank you. Great stuff. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lamont.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Take care. That is Lamont Pope from the Chicago Tribune. Look, I you know, I know that we need to see more Andrew Vaughn, but I'm all for riding the hot hand, and I think that Yermin Mercedes has helped pretty much in every game he's played, and he's done something that makes me think he deserves to remain in the lineup.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. You don't have to worry about Mercedes being replaced or supplanted or arrested even. I would let him hit until he can't hit anymore. Look, he's still – you know, making more, he's getting more hits than outs. I would think that if you want to, you know, righty versus righty is not something that plays the percentages, but, you know, Andrew Vaughn against Bieber is not something you look at. But I do think that Lamont's onto something. You want to see the kid play a little bit. And even though, you know, for reasons you've expressed about your concerns defensively, yeah, when you look at the Sox lineup and he's not in it, I think you start to like, oh, really? I'd like to see what he's got. And, we'll see tonight. We'll see. It's a big challenge, great matchup. And I think it's a shame, you know, it's a shame that you're looking at, I'd love to see Zach Collins against Shane Bieber, Molly, but I don't think he's going to play tonight, right? I don't think there's a spot for him in the lineup if you have Grandal and Mercedes is your DH. It's a great problem to have, but I think that's one of them.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, one of the reasons the Sox have done as well as they've done is, you know, they've got a lot of guys that can switch hit, and they've got guys that, you know, can help them with a matchup. And I am I wrong? Didn't Zach Collins catch
Giolito?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I mean, is that? Well, I'm not saying he's a regular catcher for him, but do we have a lock that Grandal is going to be catching him tonight?
I don't think it's a lock. I think it was just maybe it's a poor assumption on my part that you would think that you would have Yasmani Grandal in the lineup when you're facing the defending Cy Young Award champion. You know, that would be a gimme, right? Wouldn't you think that?
Yeah, I guess. We should ask Justin Reardon how he feels about it because he knows what's happened. Oh, no, I've misnamed him again. I'm sorry, Shane. Is it too late to say sorry? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.